Welcome to this episode number 4 of the Yellow and Blues podcast. I'm your host, Srini Patsardi, and I'm joined by my co-host, Venkat, as usual. Hello, Venkat. How are you doing?
Hi, Srini. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Yeah. There's been a lot of cricket that has happened since we did our last podcast, especially a lot going on at the Women's World Cup, which we'll talk about in a bit. And also, we'll talk about Indian women's performances in that World Cup. West Indies and England have played out a dull and boring draw on the heels of Pakistan and Australia in the first test. We'll also look at the MCC announcing a number of changes to the loss of cricket. But before we get into all of those things, let's just do a quick roundup of what's happening currently in the world of cricket. As we're recording at the time of this recording, you know, it's the end of day 3 of second Pakistan and Australia test. Australia have put on a mammoth 556 for 9 declared. And have then gone out and bowled Pakistan out for 148. But then rather than enforcing the follow-on, they've decided to bat again. It just, I don't know if you, as a coincidence or whatever, and it just reminded me of that great comeback from V.V.S. Lakshman and Rahul Dravid, which happened 21 years ago today.
That's there in the back of their mind, yeah. I think that's what it is prompted them to. We would like to think it that way.
Yeah, we would like to think it's because of the Dravid and Lakshman effort, but I'm sure, you know, it's not so much. You know, Australia had to do so much bowling in the first. I just touched upon it, like, you know, in terms of it being a dull draw. There was so much bowling to do, so this just gives them the opportunity for their bowlers to get some rest and come back charged again tomorrow to, like, you know, with 2 more days left. Definitely, like, you know, we can't move away from that test match without mentioning Usman Khawaja. It's such a feel-good, wonderful feel-good story. Overall, the Usman Khawaja story in the last 4 months or so since he was brought back into that Sydney test where he scored like 200s in each innings, and then to come to Pakistan, the country of his birth, having scored a 97 in the first test and then 160 in this innings. It's such a wonderful story, isn't it?
Definitely, Srini. I think definitely deserves a mention. It's been wonderful to see that evolution of him as an established player. He was in and out of the team, but now he's, you know, cemented his place in Australian cricket.
Yeah. One other interesting tidbit or funny fact, you know, I talked about Usman Khawaja. He obviously batted, like, you know, quite a bit in that first test, and he's batted quite a bit in this second test. Fawad Alam, on the other hand, for Pakistan, he fielded for 5 days in that first test and didn't get to bowl or bat. And then on the first 2 days of this test, it just becomes funnier. You know, he fielded for the first 2 days, came into bat on day 3 and got out first ball to Mitchell Starc.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the outings we've had in the club cricket scene where you turn up week after week without doing anything and, you know, get out when you get a chance of the second ball triggered by an LBW. So, yeah, we can relate to Fawad Alam.
Yeah, Sunday league plays, you know, we can absolutely relate to Fawad Alam. The only difference being, you know, we have to pay match fees. He get paid for fielding. That's probably the only difference, but... Yeah, that was so much funny, like, you know, looking at that. Talking about Australia, you know, we probably should segue into the World Cup. You know, let's do a roundup of what's happening in the Women's World Cup. We'll look at India's performance in a few moments, you know, just kind of rounding off everything else that's happening in the Women's World Cup. Australia had utter dominance. We are sort of halfway through this World Cup. Most teams have played 3 games. Out of their 7, couple of teams have played 4 games. But yeah, Australia have, like, you know, rightfully on the top of the table, having played 3 and won 3. The interesting bit for me is more England, who at the minute are just propped up at the bottom of the table by Pakistan. Both of them have lost all of the games. Pakistan have lost 4 and England have lost 3. England being the defending champions, losing 3 is a bit of a surprise for me.
Yeah, indeed, England losing is going to be something that we would watch out. We can look at that in detail when we cover the India women's performance in the World Cup and how that has an impact. England's form has an impact on Indian women's chances of winning the game. You were wanted to talk about the women's CPL as well, Srini?
I was going to talk about the women's CPL. I will in a minute, but just the other one I wanted to pick up was on, like, you know, Bangladesh actually beating Pakistan in the women's, in the first time Bangladesh have won a match at the Women's World Cup. Again, it's one of those feel-good stories where, you know, that win will bring a lot more players into Bangladesh women's cricket. So it's well done. Congratulations to the Bangladesh women on their first win against Pakistan. You mentioned the women's CPL. We spoke a lot about this last week when, you know, Ramesh Raja announced that PSL are going to start a women's version, and we said, you know, it was high time for a WIPL in India as well. But yeah, it's been announced today that, you know, the women's CPL is going to start as a three-team tournament and will run in parallel to the main men's CPL. Again, similar to what we mentioned last week when we were talking about this, to say, like, you know, how the women's IPL could be played as a double header along with the men's IPL. I mean, most of the other cricketing nations now almost seem to have the ECB did it the first, you know, with the KS Super League or the KSL, and then they have now the Women's 100. The BBL started, you know, and then the Women's BBL started in parallel. As we've just heard, like, you know, Pakistan have announced the starting of a Women's PSL. The CPL have now announced a Women's CPL. Even to the extent, like, you know, the Tamil Nadu Cricket Association have announced that they are starting a Women's TNPL. It beggars belief that, you know, the richest board cannot actually, like, start a women's IPL when one of their associations, the Tamil Nadu Cricket Association, can start, thinks that there are enough players to run a six-team women's TNPL. The Indian Cricket Board doesn't think there are enough women to start even a four-team women's IPL. Anyway, I sincerely hope that the PCC are listening and bring out the women's IPL, if not this season, at least at the beginning of the next IPL.
Yeah. I'm sure they will do something. I mean, it's there is pressure, definitely, and rightfully so, because they have to do something.
Yeah. The other big news that kind of come out in the world of cricket was the number of law changes that was announced by the MCC, you know, in terms of the Monkhead, which we kind of don't agree with in terms of being it called the Monkhead. But yeah, what did you think about the law changes?
Yeah, just giving you a whirlwind tool, I'll definitely come to the Monkhead or run out, as it should be rightly called. You know, if you look at, there are several laws that have changed. I'm not going to go into detail of everything. But if you look at a few of them, batters returning when caught is a main one. I think it was trialed in 100 last year. So if a batter hits the ball in the air, usually, or in the past, we've had when the batters cross each other, where if you try to run, the batter on the non-striker end could end up playing the next delivery, depending on how high the ball was hit and how the catch was taken. I think the new rule has eliminated that. So if a batter gets out, getting caught, the incoming batter is the one who's going to be at the striker's end, unless it's if it's the last ball of the over. So that makes sense. It simplifies a lot of things. In all other instances, as we discussed before this podcast, we were talking about this is in terms of bringing it line with all the other dismissals. The batter out is replaced by a newcomer. Judging a wide, I think, is another rule that has been brought in. So which shows how our game has changed, isn't it? So you have batters moving about in the crease, going wide outside leg stump to off stump, and then coming back to wide outside leg stump. And if a bowler ends up bowling wide outside off stump, in the past it was called on wide because the umpire had to take into consideration where the batter was standing in the normal position. But now they have revised it to include wherever the batter has been during that delivery stride would be taken into account, which is rightfully so. It is a lot of advantage for the bowler to you know, capitalize on that, and it's great. And quickly moving on to, I think, unfair movement by fielding side. This was always on. It was always called the dead ball. It is deliberate. You can have people moving around when the ball is being bowled. So I think now they have changed it to 5 penalty runs to the batting side, which could be, so it will now see the batting side awarded 5 penalty runs. So which means, you know, you will get, it's like ball hitting the helmet, right? You get 5 penalty points. So you get extra runs if somebody moves around in the field, which is rightfully so. And then last but not least, our favorite, which is the run out, or as it was called as Mankad by, I think it is the English and the Australians and some some other cricketers as well, but Australians and English players I've seen voice and repeatedly call it Mankad, even though the family of the great cricketer, Indian cricketer, has requested not to be called it that way. But now I think that has been moved to from unfair play to run out. I think that's where it belongs. If you gain that extra yards, it's going to cost significant. It's going to give you significant advantage. Nobody calls stumping unfair play. A keeper doesn't give you a warning to return back to your crease. And so the bowler shouldn't either, in my opinion. And then the laws also agree. And so I saw a tweet from Stuart Broad saying, this is disagreeing with that law. And I think there was somebody else who countered it, saying if batsman nicks it to the first slip and stands there, would it be called broaded rather than mankarded? I think, so this is the whirlwind summary of the rules. There have been several other changes as well. I would have people go, for those academically interested, to go to the MCC site and browse through the laws. It's an interesting read. But let's see, it's not coming into effect until October 1st. Especially around the Mankad side of things, I don't think the stigma around it will be removed unless the clubs and the regional crickets and people at all cricketing levels embrace that. And there's still going to be the spirit of cricket, which I don't know if what the spirit of cricket is playing within the laws, and the laws does allow.
Yeah, I mean, bearing in mind though, like, you know, Ashwin and Josh Butler both are playing for Rajasthan Royals this year, I think it would have probably not be possible for Ashwin to run out Josh Butler, but this, yeah, all of these rule changes, I think, will take effect on the 1st of October, so we should probably see them in the T20 World Cup. That's probably the first biggest, I think, tournament that starts after these rules come into effect. So the wide one that you talked about, you know, people like Jas Butler, Rishabh Pant, AB de Villiers, these are the ones, I think, who have caused this rule to come in, the way they bat 360 degrees, moving from side to side. We'll see that in the World T20 later in Australia this year. That's where probably that rule will come into effect. Interesting. We'll see how those rules go. Moving on, we talked about in brief, you know, when we looked at the world news, kind of the World Cup, and mentioned about how England have really not performed in this World Cup. They are going to be India's next opponents in the Women's World Cup. India played 2 games this weekend, last week since our last podcast, one against New Zealand and one against West Indies. They lost to New Zealand, one against West Indies. So the loss against New Zealand, I guess, I wouldn't say it was expected, but having played a bilateral series just before the start of this World Cup and losing 4-1, you can see, like, you know, where they've gone into that mindset. Not just that particular match, but even the match before against Pakistan as well. It seemed like, you know, the first 10 overs during the power play, the Indian batters were not willing to take any risk and were playing within themselves, play not coming out of their shell. I think I read a stat somewhere around how they scored only about 30-odd runs in the first 10 overs against Pakistan, and then 26 or 25, something like that, against New Zealand, which was kind of very, very contrast to what they did against West Indies when they came out all guns blazing. I think I mentioned, I don't know if you remember, you know, the last week about how Shefali Verma seemed to be out of form after the New Zealand series, right? Her batting form had tailed off. And so India made a change, bringing in Yastika Bhatia for the second game against the New Zealand. She quite didn't do, you know, but that change was coming in place. And then in the subsequent game as well, Spriti Mandhana and Harmanpreet against West Indies, they both, like, you know, scored 100 and really, really took India to that big score of 300 plus.
It was a good game. I didn't expect that kind of performance. I think it was really good to look at the partnership. I think that's what was heartening to see, that the performance was complete, both in terms of bowling as well as batting.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned about the power play in the first two games. It was so refreshing to see India. They scored 60 plus in that third game against West Indies. And I hope that, you know, they use that as a template to go for the next two games are against England and Australia. We know Australia are, like, really dominating this tournament. But I think, you know, India, if they, like, take this template and bat well, similarly, like, you know, Harmanpreet and Smriti Mandhana, Yastika Bhatia, Mithali Raj, you know, the middle order is still being inconsistent. If it fires, India potentially can go all the way through in this tournament. You know, I'm hoping that we see that, you know, not just Kaur and Mandhana, you know, in terms of firing, but the likes of Yastika Bhatia, Mithali Raj, Deepti Sharma, Richa Ghosh, etc., also, like, you know, come into their own. We saw, like, you know, Sneha Rana and Pooja Vastrakar do against India in the Pakistan game. If all of them come together and kind of, you know, get into that form, I'm sure the next two games will be good ones for India.
It's going to be interesting, Srini. I mean, I would not say it's going to be easy, because England have nowhere to go other than to win all the games. So they're going to fight to the nail. Australia, we all know how dominant they are. So, yes, we cannot have, you know, one or two knocks here and there by Indian women. They all have to pull up as a team. I'm sure they would do that. And, you know, in the spirit of fair play, I think England also should, you know, up their game, and hope they will. And we can see some good contest with India emerging the winners.
Yeah. That's fingers crossed. A couple of shout-outs, I think, for Julan Goswami and Mithali Raj, you know, in terms of where Julan reached 40 wickets in World Cup, the first player, you know, the leading wicket taker, and equally Mithali Raj, you know, kind of captaining the most World Cup matches, you know, with 24. I think I said to you before this, you know, how Tendulkar on a sixth World Cup ended up with winning the World Cup. I really hope Mithali Raj, this is a sixth World Cup, you know, and her swan song ends up winning. She was this close to doing it in the last World Cup here in England. Let's hope that she gets an opportunity to win this World Cup and finish with a real high.
Yeah, definitely hoping that it's going to turn out good for Mithali Raj and to India. As I said, there are several other players who would be looking to hang their boots. So let's see how it pans out. We will be definitely following. I'm sure you are continuing your midnight vigil for Indian women's cricket.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, it's kind of works in, well, probably not on so much on weekdays, you know, when you have work in the morning, you know, because it's happening in New Zealand. It's kind of a midnight vigil for us here in the UK. Hopefully, like, you know, the weekend game against Australia, we should we should probably be able to watch maybe not the England game tomorrow on Wednesday night. Segueing in, you know, I mentioned about Smriti Mandana's 100. I don't know if you know this, the start around, like, you know, Smriti Mandana scored her first 100, like, after about 2 years.
2 years,
she wears a number 18 jersey. She's the only other Indian to have scored a pink ball 100. It kind of, there's somebody in the men's team who wears a number 18 jersey, hasn't scored a century for 2 years, has scored a century in the pink ball game. I was hoping for number 71 to come in the India-Sri Lanka second test. Take it away, Venkat. What did you think about the, well, it's finished this morning, the India-Sri Lanka second test?
Yeah, we were right, weren't we? By the time we record this on Monday, the test would be already over. It was over. The dismissal of Kohli, I think from a technical standpoint, he should have played forward. I mean, I'm nobody to comment on Kohli's technique or batting, you know, having scored only 150 in the last entire season. But the fact of the matter was that, you know, he continued. His dismissal was the same in the both the innings. Definitely, he would have felt that he missed out. And the ball kept low, obviously, we all know that. But the batting was the wicket was not too bad, you know, highlighted by the fact that Dimut Karunaratne scored a phenomenal 100, albeit in the losing cause. And then Shreyas Iyer in the first innings, you know, kind of did really well. Rishabh Pant, of course, needless to say, smashing the ball around everywhere. Not to mention Ashwin going past Dale Steyn. I think that is, and Rohit Sharma rightfully called him an all-time great. There has been a lot happening. The best thing for me was Suranga Lakmal. It was his last swan song game. He's played 74, been a phenomenal servant for Sri Lankan cricket. When he got out, he was going out, I think there was handshakes from Rahul Dravid and Kohli. And then when he got dismissed, in the last innings, the first person to go and congratulate was Bumrah, which is really nice to see. I think this is a great summary. These are some of the highlights for me, Ashwini, but I'll leave it to you to see if you want to go into detail into any of these.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a couple of things, you know, you mentioned Rishabh Pant in terms of his batting. For me, yeah, Rishabh Pant, we all know Rishabh Pant, the batsman. You know, we've seen it against Australia, in South Africa, we saw it, you know, in England, we've seen it. More than Rishabh Pant, the batsman, I think what stood out for me was Rishabh Pant, the keeper. He's come leaps and bounds since he started, you know, in terms of his wicket-keeping. He's worked so hard on his wicket-keeping. When he took over from MS Dhoni, I think everybody of us said, like, you know, Saha is the best clubman in India at that point in time. Rishabh Pant's a good batsman. You know, you would play Saha as a wicket-keeper and Rishabh Pant as a batsman. But in the last year, I think his wicket-keeping has come leaps and bounds. Some of the takes that he took, you know, from both standing up and for the spin bowlers, not necessarily the ones that wicket. There was, I think I was watching on Saturday, there was this bounce and he took so much, you know, it was not a wicket, you know, but keeping his eye on the pitch, uneven bounce and everything else, keeping low, it's come leaps and bounds, you know, hugely. The other one we talked about is Shreyas Iyer, where he, a couple of weeks ago, we said the show should probably be called Shreyas Iyer. So when it did so in the T20s and his form in the test match, he's just carried on that form, you know, throughout from the test match onwards into this thing. You mentioned Ashwin, absolute, you know, legend, went past Kapil Dev, went past Dale Steyn. Now he's actually in the top eight. The only other two cricketers who are currently actively playing ahead of him in that list are Stuart Broad and James Anderson. Those are the only two others who are currently playing. So I don't know where, how far, you know, I don't think personally that, you know, he will get to Shane Warne's 700 plus, never mind Murali's 800. Getting given where India are playing in terms of tests and stuff like that, if he gets to 500 plus, it'll probably be a big achievement. I don't see him really going to, like, you know, to the 700 or even kind of coming close to James Anderson as well. He'll probably finish somewhere in, fingers crossed, in the top 5 or 6.
Yeah.
That's probably where he will end up finishing. The wait for Virat Kohli's number 71 continues. We will have to wait, I think, for a while now, because the next cricket that India play is the after the IPL. I think it's the South Africans come in for a few T20s, 4 or 5 T20s. Maybe, I can't remember, but it's pretty much a white ball series. There's no tests involved. And then the next test match India play is at Edgbaston against England, the 1 remaining test from the last year. That is probably the next test match that India play. And I'm not sure, but at least there's been no other tests that's been announced so far for this year. So that seems to be, like, you know, the wait for the number 71 kind of almost feels like it will reach the 3-year mark, for fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Once it comes, the floodgates open. As far as what happens with the Indian cricket team, well, the bandwagon now moves on to the IPL. They'll probably spend a bit of time next week previewing, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of each team in terms of the IPL. Couple of the former Lions, you know, one, obviously, Pujara, he's moving to Sussex. You know, he's not playing for any of the IPL, he's moving to Sussex. But more importantly, I wanted to ask you about the other Lion that's moved to RCB and has been named as their captain.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I want to highlight that we don't even have a week. I mean, like, a couple of weeks break between the test and IPL. Yes, Faf is definitely on our Lions watch list. Ex-CSK player, I'm sure he's been appointed because, one, RCB has a lot of faith in AB de Villiers, and the fact that Faf is associated as a childhood friend for AB would have mattered a lot. They see him as a similar type of player in terms of character, not necessarily in the cricketing style. And also Kohli from part of the leadership team definitely would be very comfortable. I'm sure RCB are going to do very well under Faf because he has learned so much from Dhoni, with whom he openly admires. So there is a lot going for them this season. They are a strong contender, and they will bring a few tricks that they have learned from the CSK camp.
Yeah, we'll look at that, you know, in terms of in more detail next week. The other line we should probably sort of look at is South African Dwayne Pretorius. Again, we'll get into this in more details around, like, you know, what's being happening with the South African camp. But from a CSK perspective, you know, kind of Dwayne Pretorius, he's in the South African T20 squad for the 3-match series against Bangladesh. So he's very unlikely to be, I think, which clashes with the first game. So he will probably be missing out. I don't know if you've seen the pictures of the CSK camp at Surat, spending time. Yeah, exciting times. You know, the Indian season is finished, and the next thing is the IPL in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. But as you said, probably next week we will delve a little bit into what the CSK chances of on this IPL and what the strengths and weaknesses of other teams as well. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. So maybe on that note, let's wrap this episode. And, you know, as we've said it a few times now, next week we will preview the strengths and weaknesses of the different IPL teams, but also look at where the Indian women are in the World Cup table after having played England and Australia. Hopefully they win at least one, if not both, the matches. That will probably put them in contention for the semi-final. So we'll round it up next week.
Fantastic. That would be fun, Srini. Looking forward to that. Definitely, it's going to be a fun week. Hopefully, India emerge triumphant.
For our listeners, if you like the sound of this, now please feel free to subscribe to this podcast and follow the website Yellow and Blues. We are also on Twitter @Yellow and Blues. So leave your reviews and ratings on, you know, the podcast at Spotify or any other platform where you get it from. We would love to hear from you in terms of your comments, messages on Twitter handle, or leave your comments on any of the podcasts, and we will try and kind of respond back. If there's anything you would like to listen from us around the Indian cricket or the CSK, let us know, and we will try and see what we can do. Until then, have a good week.